From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. It's Idaho Matters. Jenny Jackson, in the early days of the pandemic, decided to move her family out of New York City and go stay with her in-laws in Connecticut. And when she did that, she decided, hey, what better time than now to write a book? And that's exactly what she did. Jim Agudat sat down with Jackson to talk more about her new book, Pineapple Street, and what inspired her.
You know, it was a very surprising thing. I've been a book editor for 20 years, and I really felt like I had found my calling. I felt like being part of the writing community in that way was what I was supposed to do. But I was, as we all were, feeling really isolated and lonely, and I missed going to parties, and I missed gossiping, and I missed flirting, mm-hmm. and I missed all the fun social stuff that comes with, you know, my normal lucky life. And so I decided to just sit down and start writing characters who could go to parties, who could go have cocktails, who could flirt and fight and, you know, have affairs and misbehave in ways that I didn't normally do in my daily life. But I was just craving the sparkle of life. And so I wrote it.
And we should note, as you mentioned, you're an editor. You're actually the vice president and executive editor at Alfred Knopf. And if folks aren't familiar, we should say you've helped ushered in some really phenomenal writers, one being Kevin Kwan. And if you don't know who that is, if you've seen the movie Crazy Rich Asians, that's Kevin Kwan. He wrote this entire trilogy. So I am so curious, here you are as an editor, as a vice president of this company. Did you always have a writing bug, or was it really here you are kind of shut down and, as you said, not able to live your regular life?
You know, I think that the writing bug is really closely related to the editing bug because, you know, with working with authors like Kevin Kwan, with Emily St. John Mandel, Gabrielle Zevin, I edited Cormac McCarthy actually too. It's like,
oh, wow.
You are just, I mean, which was incredible, but you are so in the weeds with the writers in the most wonderful, exciting way. And so it didn't feel terribly different. It just felt like, you know, maybe I had been the co-pilot for a while and I just swapped chairs while the pilot, you know, hit the restroom or something. So it was like, I'd already been on the plane. I was just switching chairs kind of.
I love that. Okay. So let's talk about the book itself. It's really, there's three siblings, the Stockton siblings. And as you mentioned, I mean, it's kind of this, you know, upper class, you know, well-to-do family. But you've set it in modern times. And why decide to take that approach? Because I feel reading it, it has little nuances of almost like, you know, the books of, you know, back in like the 1800s, right? When you're,
yeah.
when you're in London and you've got the coming out parties and, you know, yeah. It's kind of that upper crust feel to it, but I love mm-hmm. that it's set in modern time.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely like, I'm a huge Jane Austen fan. I love Edith Wharton. Mm. Those are inspirations, but I think that our relationship as Americans with money has become increasingly complicated over the past decade. You know, mm-hmm. I think that the whole concept of inherited wealth has become suspicious. And you see a lot of that coming out in popular culture, whether it's White Lotus or The Menu or Succession. You know, we're taking mm-hmm. a hard look at ourselves and saying, what does it mean that we are living in a culture with such extreme income inequality? And I wanted to write about those things, but I also wanted to write a comedy, and I wanted to write a book that made people think while making them laugh. And so I've tackled the 1%, but with, I think, and I hope, a great spirit of compassion and amusement, because I want this book to be funny, and I would also like for people to get something out of it.
Well, I think too, that's the thing, right? When you look at generational wealth and here you have these three siblings and they've all dealt with it differently, right? Mm-hmm. And you, mm-hmm. and I think you see that in real life. I mean, even if you know people who may have gotten some type of inheritance or, you know, a trust fund, whatever that may be. And yes, this is like the upper 1%, 2% of the country, but yeah. Siblings never, use their wealth the same way.
God, no. And I mean, I did not have a trust fund.
Neither
I have
did
not
I.
Been, I have not been the recipient of a great inheritance, but it's even funny to look at the way my brother and I are, because you give me a dollar and I will spend it five times within 10 minutes. I love nothing more than I'm awful. I just can't help myself. And then my brother, who is he's a generous person, but honestly, I think he could survive on nothing at all. You know, he raises chickens, he has eggs, he has a vegetable garden. Like, the guy does not spend any money. So I think no matter where you fall on the spectrum, I think that we all just have our own strange relationship with money, and it is it comes from somewhere really individual and weird.
No, I agree with you. And I think it's something that we're also kind of afraid to talk about, like your relationship with money. I think within our culture, we're fine talking about income, right?
Yeah.
The haves, the have-nots, all of that kind of thing. But what is your relationship with money? And how does it hold you back? How does it not? I mean, I look at even myself and my husband, right? I mean, I always say he takes care of the finances so we have money. I mean, because I've gotten better over the years, but I even look at my two children and they have been raised in the same house. And my oldest is like your brother. I mean, he doesn't raise, you know, he's only 14. He's not raising chickens. But that child will save and save and save and save, and is so conscientious with his money, and is like researches if there's something that he wants, right? And then waits for it to go on sale. My youngest, it is like that money is like on fire in his pocket. I really appreciate that you dig into relationships around money, not just wealth, if that makes sense.
It makes us all very uncomfortable. And of course, when something makes us uncomfortable, like, I want to write about it, you know, because when something is taboo, that means that's where all the juicy stuff is. You know, there's so much guilt and shame associated with it. I find that money is really hard to talk about for people who grew up with very little. And I find money is really hard to talk about with people who grew up with a lot. I think that the closer to the middle you are, the more comfortable you are. And, you know, I will say the vast majority of Americans do identify as middle class, which obviously mathematically is impossible. Like, we're not all middle class, but it is just a much more comfortable way for us to look at ourselves. And that, I think, is because none of us want to stick out, because we find the whole thing pretty awkward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So out of the three siblings, and we should say that there is Sasha is the oldest, and then Cord, and then Georgiana. I'm saying it right. Correct?
Georgiana. So Darlie, Cord, and Georgiana. Yes.
Okay.
And then Sasha.
Oh, because marries Cord. Okay. Yes, okay.
Exactly.
So my question is about Sasha, because here is Sasha, you know, kind of how you just described, right? Middle class. I think really most people reading this book would probably relate to her the best.
Yes.
But she's all of a sudden seen as like this gold digger, this horrible person. Yeah. Was that something when you were creating her character that you saw that happening, or was it just something that naturally happened because this family has such wealth and she, you know, in their minds kind of, you know, went after it?
Well, I feel like the real drama and energy from this novel comes from misunderstandings, and her in-laws have misunderstood her. And there is sort of a little reveal, and readers will see what they have gotten wrong. So that her in-laws have think her intentions are impure, when in fact Sasha could care less about it. She married Cord before she knew he had money, and she didn't think it was going to make a big difference between them. But it turns out that, like many of the things we bring to marriage, it weighs heavily on them, and they have to kind of figure out how to reconcile their different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. So out of the three siblings, did you have a favorite?
Well, I have an unpopular favorite. I love Georgiana, who is the baby of the family, because she is a delightful, brat. She's sort of walking through the world.
That's a good way to describe her.
She's so spoiled, but she's not a bad person. She's just oblivious. Over the course of the novel, she does figure some things out. But it's so funny because when some early reviews are like, I love the book, even though I don't relate to the characters. And I'm like, I don't think you want to admit that you relate to bratty Georgiana, but maybe you do.
Well, okay. So here's the thing about her, right? Is that I think how I see her, she's like every baby of the family, whether you have money or not.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
She is. And she's used to being treated in a way where she can kind of get away with arriving at mom and dad's house with, you know, her dirty laundry, or she doesn't bring wine when she shows up to a party, and she, you know, borrows her mom's stuff and then drops it off dirty at the dry cleaner where her mom pays for it. You know, she's just, I think all of us a little bit behave that way with our families, but definitely the babies.
That was Jemma Gaudette speaking with Jenny Jackson, the author of Pineapple Street. It's a new novel. You should check it out. It's really good.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is Chip Brantley, co-host of the NPR podcast White Lies. Before we found the man in Vancouver, before we sued the State Department, before we snuck into the graveyard of a federal penitentiary, all we had were the photographs. Photographs of a group of Cuban men standing on the roof of a prison in rural Alabama. That's this season on the NPR podcast, White Lies.